Good man, right, Tony.
Hi, John.
Hi, welcome to the John Covey podcast, firstly.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time. So this is episode 45, I believe. So Tony, before we start, listen, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I work mostly as a coach, one-to-one coaching. There's three kinds of questions that come up in a lot in the coaching that we work that I do. Uh-huh. The first one is, why do I struggle with anxiety and what can I do about it? These are mainly business people that I'm talking about.
Of course.
That I'm talking to. The second question is, why is it that I've achieved everything that I ever wanted to do and don't feel happy, and why don't I feel content?
Good question.
And it happens a lot with people who are successful, because they're so focused on the goals that they're going for. When they get there, they don't know what's beyond it.
Got you.
And
got you.
The third question that comes up a lot is, I've lost my mojo, what can I do about that? People who are really good at what they're doing, but somehow they just kind of go off the boil a little bit.
Fantastic. So the three questions, the first one is
how can I get rid, why am I getting this anxiety? How can I get rid of it?
The second one is, why am I not feeling fulfilled?
Yeah, and the third one is, how can I get my mojo back?
Oh, well, listen, before we go into any of these questions, you've got to give us the answers to those, surely.
If it was as simple as giving you the answers for them, then I'd just write it in a book and people could download it. And it's not, and it's different reasons for everybody.
Of course.
When it comes to the anxiety side of things, it has to be done on a one-to-one. You can talk about people, a lot of the time it's anxiety because they're too stressed, and that's very often true. But what it's really about is the way that they're thinking about the world.
Yes.
And unless, first of all, they've got to accept responsibility for it, because the natural thing is, the anxiety is something that happens out there and we tend to blame other people for it. Until we take responsibility, nothing will change.
Got you.
And it's about helping people. And actually, all three of the questions, it's the same answer. The same answer is, how are you thinking? How are you processing the world? And what do you need to do differently to get a different result?
Fantastic. So how would you go about getting people to then take that ownership over that? Because it's very easy for people to hear this information, but it's not always easy for them to apply it.
No, it's not. And quite often by the time people get to me, they've been through all of the other options that they can think of. And sometimes it's a last resort, but I'm not a warm, cuddly kind of therapist kind of guy. I'm very direct with people that if you don't change what you're doing, nothing is going to change.
And love it.
The people that I work with appreciate that. Not everybody wants to work with, because some people don't want to hear that. Most of the people I'm working with are usually successful in their businesses, so they already know that the result of their success is because of what they've done.
Yes.
So it's quite easy to then apply it. So the results that you're getting, the anxiety, that's because of something that you're doing as well.
Got
so it. It's cause and effect.
Yes.
And
yes.
once they see that, and then you help them just to start to get a little change and they start to believe you, then they start to take ownership.
It's just baby steps.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But if people don't take ownership, they won't work with me.
Of course. Is there a certain technique or a certain skill that you use to help people to take ownership? Is there a framework or is there something that you do with them to allow them to do that?
No, it's all about the person in front of me. The framework, the technique is NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and I've got a background in hypnotherapy as well.
Yes.
And the two are very linked anyway.
Yeah.
So it's broadly, that's the framework, but then it's applying that framework to the person in front of you.
Got you.
And so the most important thing is to create a relationship with that person.
Yes.
Because without that relationship, techniques don't work anyway.
Of course.
And what I have to do is to get people to, first of all, be very honest with me, because sometimes the kind of thoughts that people get going through their head, they don't want to share it with people.
Mm.
But in order to know what's happening, sometimes they
need
to. So you've got to have that level of trust.
Of course.
And the second is, very often we don't understand the way that we're thinking, because thoughts flash through our mind so quickly, we have to learn to be able to capture them and figure out what is actually going on there.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about intelligent people, which most people are, once you can capture what's actually going in there and you can show them, they can see why it's not working.
Right.
It's not like I'm having to tell them something that that they didn't know anyway.
Of course.
And I can give you an example of that. There was a very successful guy that I was working with who was having panic attacks before he went into business meetings. And what he didn't realise, and before he was going in there, he was telling himself that he was going to have a panic attack, and he was creating pictures in his head of him having a panic attack.
Right.
And obviously, what's that going to do?
It's making it real.
Yeah, of course it is. But the thoughts were going through his head so quickly, he didn't know that was what was happening.
Really? So what would you do in someone in that situation then? How would you get them to realise, recognise, and then action the change?
Okay, that's a good question. What we've got to do, in NLP terms, we've got to elicit their strategy.
Right.
Now, if you're listening to Tony Robbins, he calls it a recipe. What is the recipe that they follow for creating their panic attacks?
Sure.
And what you have to do is almost slow, help the person get back into that moment. There's two ways of looking at memories. One is you put it over there on a wall like a picture and something that you look at, and the other is you get back into it.
Right.
So what you have to do, we call it putting the cook back into the kitchen. You've got to get them back into that moment, and it's all down to questioning technique. You've got to take them through it and through it and through it to figure out what's happening.
Of course.
Because, and they'll probably say things such as, I hear this voice in my head and I get this picture and then I have a panic attack. Which came first, the voice or the picture?
Ooh.
And they haven't thought about that. But yeah. You have to slow it down. And then you have to test it, because they'll give you an answer.
Yes.
But is that their intellectual understanding, or is that what's really happening?
Of course.
So you go over it again and sure. again.
And I suppose that what I'm just thinking there is that it's very easy for people to misinterpret what that feeling really is as well. It could be quite easy that they feel just disappointed, but actually it's anger. Or maybe the anger is actually what comes first, and actually if they trace it back, it is feeling let down maybe.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing in itself, John, because what they're doing then is putting labels on things.
Yes.
Which is a very convenient thing to do. So people, generally they'll come to me and the label is anxiety. But that doesn't mean the same thing to two people.
Sure.
For some people, it's a tightness in their stomach or feeling sick. For some people, it's they get this tunnel vision. So actually, take the labels off for a minute. What is it that you're experiencing?
Yeah, fantastic. So Tony, I mean, like your background here, you've got technical architect at Price Lover and eBuyer originally. So what's a technical architect?
A technical architect. I worked my way up from being a software developer. So it's basically it's a software developer, but it's not, maybe as a computer programmer, I focus on one small part of a system, whereas a technical architect is designing the whole system.
Right, the framework.
The whole framework. Right. So yeah, I worked in the two companies that you mentioned, they're e-commerce companies.
Sure.
And the second one was a startup when I went to them. So I designed the whole system from everything that runs the warehouse to the stock, the order management stuff. Really? How do you get all that onto the website? How do you do all the payments and send it through to the couriers?
That's incredible. So how much of that architecture do you feel works in life?
That's a good question.
Do you feel that we need to have some kind of plan as detailed as that for our life? Do we need to have a conveyor system that says we need to do this a certain way, and that's the warehouse, so we need to make sure that we operate our life like a business in that sense?
That's a great question, and I've experimented with that, and I think the honest answer is it depends. It depends on the person. Some people like to have things out in that much detail. Some people are very, very goal-oriented.
Yep.
Some people prefer to have a rough idea in life where they're going and let the details unfold on the way. And if you're the kind of person who prefers to just have a vague plan, and you can set lots of goals, but you won't achieve them because it's not the way that you work.
Right.
So
identifying how you work.
Absolutely.
So, how would they do that? How would somebody identify how they work? If so, because we, as a coach, both myself and yourself, how many businesses and or owners do we see that's got goals that never manifest to anything because of exactly what you're talking about?
Yes.
So, like, how do you get them to understand what drives them, what makes them motivated, what allows them to be activated, if you like?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's lots of different ways of approaching that, and it is a very core problem, and there's several ways into it. There's lots of NLP skills and NLP techniques that we can apply to that, but a lot of it is kind of understanding the motivation.
Sure.
One of the reasons people don't achieve goals is because they didn't want to do it in the first place. Quite often it's somebody else's goal. Yeah. It's not what they wanted.
So it's a nice to have, not a must have.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's what Tony Robbins says, doesn't he? He says, when you take your shoulds into musts, that's when they start to happen.
Of course, yes.
And so I was listening to one of your podcasts earlier this morning, the one about Law of Attraction you were talking about.
Oh, yes.
About habits.
Habits.
And it can be difficult to change habits.
Sure.
But at the same time, there are people who've smoked every day for 50 years They find out that they've got cancer and they change that habit in an instant because the motivation's high enough.
Sure.
So looking at this from an NLP perspective, taking motivation, how do we motivate ourselves?
Pain or pleasure?
Pain or pleasure, absolutely right, yes. And if you understand which is your motivation,
I got you.
Then you can apply it. Now, one of the ways that this backfires in the workplace when people don't understand their own patterns. So I'm guessing, what I know about you, John, with your sales background,
okay.
I'm guessing that you're quite target-driven. I'm guessing that...
Massive.
Yeah?
Yeah. In fact, we were just talking about this this yesterday with my wife. I'm that target-driven that when I'm in the lead, I become almost lazy.
Right.
So I need something to be constantly pulling me. And an example was, we went go-karting last week. Within the last few weeks, we went go-karting. And I spun out on the corner a couple of times as I was getting used to it. And I ended up in fourth place, the back.
Yeah.
Back of the run. And that was the motivation I needed then to get the lines right, get the track right. And I literally, if we'd have got another 5-10 minutes tops on the track, I'd have finished first, but I came second.
Yeah.
But I was then that motivated and that driven that, you know, I was taking everything. I would be more risky with this, with the way I was driving around the corners. I weren't letting off on the throttle. I was actually driving through the corners.
Yeah.
Because I was so driven by that.
Yeah, great. And if that's the way you work, that's how you need to motivate yourself.
Sure.
So the pain and pleasure, that's exactly right. And it's classic in a sales environment, isn't it? If you hit your targets for the next 3 months, we'll send you on a weekend to Barcelona. And for the target-driven people, that works perfectly.
Sure.
But then you get the people it doesn't work for, and what you need to say to them, if you don't hit your targets for the next 3 months, you're getting fired.
Yes.
Where it becomes a problem in business, but when the manager's not self-aware to know that if they're driven by targets, that's how they're going to try and motivate everybody else.
Got you.
And unless they understand that other people are not working in the same way they do.
Makes total sense, yeah. So is there a technique or is there a method to find out if someone's motivated by pain or pleasure?
Just by questioning why is it that you're doing what you're doing?
Of course.
I was just searching in my head for there's a fantastic book called Words That Change Minds if you want to find out more about this.
Words that change minds. Fantastic.
Which is a great title for the book anyway.
Of course.
By a lady called Shelley Rose Calvert, I believe her name is. And it's all about these NLP meta programs, and one of them is about how we motivate ourselves.
Really?
And there are some formulated questions that you can ask to get the answer.
That's fantastic.
But really, as a coach, you just pick this kind of thing up in conversation.
Of course. And I suppose, like you've said, and when we've been doing it a number of years, which is going to lead into the next question in a moment, but when we've been doing things for a number of years, you get very intuitive in finding out very quickly what kind of person they are. In fact, you wouldn't even need to ask people questions. Just by meeting them, you can instantly find out what kind of person they are. You feed off them, you read off them really well.
Yes, you do. When you do that, though, it's very important to check your intuition.
Of course.
You've got to prove it. And also, we have to remember that if I meet you in a business setting, I know you're going to be very target-driven.
Right.
But if I meet you in a social situation, you might be very different in your social life.
Yeah.
So you can't make assumptions about people.
Just while we're talking about pain and pleasure, do you feel that people are a blend of the two? Or are they more geared towards one side? So, like, if they're driven by pleasure, are they driven by pleasure in all aspects of their life and business, or do they? Because there's going to be aspects of both, but are they more weighted towards one?
That's a great question, and the way to think about it, and the way to think about all of these meta programs, is that they're a continuum. That it's not you are either driven by pain or driven by pleasure, like you say. We're all somewhere on that continuum, and it can shift depending on context.
Yep.
But it can also shift just from day to day, from minute to minute.
Sure.
It's about figuring out where is your preference. We do have a preference.
Yeah.
In the same way, are you right or left-handed?
Right-handed. Yeah. Yes.
But if you needed to, could you learn to write with your left hand?
Yep.
But you just got a preference for using the right hand.
Yes.
So yes, you can use either. And it's the same with, you could learn to motivate yourself by pain. And actually having a blend of the two works perfectly. Away from motivation, away from pain, is great for getting started with something. Mm. The classic example is the yo-yo dieters, the people who put weight on and lose it and put it back on again. They start out by looking in the mirror, not liking what they see, and they want to get away from that as far as possible. If they're only motivated by pain, when they get a little way away from that, the pain's gone. So they fall back into their own patterns.
Into the old habit.
So that motivation's great for getting us off the starting line, but then we need that towards motivation, towards the pleasure.
Of course.
What's the reward to keep you going?
I've got you. So, so what would you do in that situation then, using weight as an example? You lose the initial bit of weight, so the initial pains have been moved.
Yes.
You feel satisfied. Yeah. How do you then re-motivate them again to get to that next level and continue, and or even stay committed to that change?
Yeah, staying committed to me is a better way of looking at it, because if you lose the motivation, then it's hard to get it again. It's momentum is you need to keep it going.
Of course.
So it, to me, it's a combination of while you're using that away from motivation, that's when you've got to start your goal setting. And what is it that you want? Why are you doing it? And that's, that's the question. Why are you doing it? And you have to keep asking the question until really until the person breaks down in tears, because that's what the real
or the root cause,
or what they really want.
And
they might be, because people might say, I want to lose weight so that I can fit into that dress and go to that party.
But what's the real reason?
What's the
it?
Real reason?
Sure.
How are they going to feel?
I want to turn heads again like I used to when I was younger, maybe.
And how would that make you feel when you're turning the heads?
Right.
Human behaviour is driven by desire for certain feelings, feeling accepted, feeling feeling beautiful, feeling good looking, feeling part of the gang, whatever
of course,
it is.
Significant and all them kind of things.
They're the drivers of human behaviour.
Fantastic. Why is that?
Wow. I think that's something that's wired into our brain so deep.
Sure.
I think. And
is that part of our just, do you think that that's just natural DNA? Like cats are never taught how to prowl or hunt, but they're incredible at doing it.
Yeah.
Every cat is the same. They all prowl, they all get down, they all do it. It's like it's hardwired into their DNA. Do you think a certain element of suffering for humans is hardwired into our DNA?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know. It's not something I've ever thought about. Mm. They say that the only things that we know how to do when we're born is how to cry to get food and how to get attention.
Get attention.
To get
fantastic.
A
love. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And why does that change?
Does it change, or is it that we just learn something? Yeah, we learn.
So I remember seeing a quote that said, you know, like most people will dim their light in case it shines too brightly in other people's eyes.
Yeah, it's a nice quote.
And how true is that for people who they lock away the real version of themselves because they're scared they're going to offend people, or they're scared what people might say about the way that they're responding. What's your advice for someone in that situation?
My advice for somebody, let me just make sure I understand the question, for somebody who doesn't want to put their head above the parapet. That's a great question. I don't know that I've got a simple bit of advice for them. If I was working with them, it's all about building up their self-esteem.
Of course, of course.
And the kind of questions are, what is it that you're afraid of?
Good question.
What might happen? If you put your head above the parapet and say something that's different to everybody else, what might happen?
Of course.
And what does that mean?
What does that mean?
And that's the question, what does that mean? Because we draw conclusions about life. And I was talking about this at a presentation I did a couple of nights ago. You could get somebody who, when they were young, their parents were away a lot, and they might say, when I was young, my parents were working all the time, and that shows that they didn't love me. They didn't want to be around. Didn't want to be around me. And somebody else might say, my parents were working a lot when I was a child, which shows how much they love me, because they put in all that effort to get me everything that I wanted in life.
Of course.
And as a result of that, it helped me to learn my self-resilience and to be independent, and it taught me my artistic capabilities and stuff. So same set of facts.
Yeah.
And it's the conclusions that we draw from them.
That's incredible. So okay, cool. Well, anyway, so the next question then is, so like, you've been doing this for what, almost seven years now?
Almost 7 years.
What's been your biggest challenge? You know, like, whether that is yourself in like the stories that you tell yourself, what's the biggest challenge? Do you know what has been the biggest challenge?
Oh, that's a good question as well. The biggest challenge for me has been walking the walk.
Okay.
As well as talking the talk, because I'm naturally a very intellect driven person, which means that I understand things intellectually. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the NLP stuff, I understood it and I was teaching it to other people, but I wasn't always living it myself.
Got you.
So my biggest challenge is applying it to myself constantly as we go. Because I, like a lot of people, I've got some terrible patterns that I learned in childhood.
Of course.
Or as I've gone through life, taught myself, wherever I got them from. And it's remembering to apply all of this stuff to myself
sure.
as well.
Sure. So how did you do that then? How did you ensure that you made yourself aware that you wasn't doing it, and how you then implemented it to make sure that you continue to make that change in that pattern?
A couple of ways. It's a constant process of self-awareness. It all starts with self-awareness. But then I've had some great coaches. All right. I've still got a great coach.
Good. Yeah. Excellent.
And I don't see that changing.
Brilliant. So what happened 7 years ago to make this change?
That's a good question as well. So I was working in IT. I was doing very well in IT. I was working for a very well-funded startup. The people that I was working with had got a history of bringing people into startups, and everybody made a huge amount of money from it. When I joined that company, if I'm honest, I was bored with IT. I didn't want to go back into it. So I went in with pound signs in my eyes.
Right.
As a result, I wasn't enjoying what I was doing. I got incredibly stressed by it, which led to quite serious anxiety and panic attacks. And so I had to get out of it because it was killing me.
Which then led you to find NLP, stress, hypnosis yourself.
Yes.
Right, so like you basically found the solutions for you.
Absolutely.
Realised how powerful it was and then made a pledge to help others.
That's exactly what happened.
What a great story.
Yeah. And when I left IT, my pledge was I'm going to save the world from stress.
Yes. So tell me about stress then. I mean, I've got a variation of different meanings towards stress, but like, what's yours? Because we're not here to talk about me, we're talking about you, aren't we, Sarah?
Well, stress is, there's lots of different kinds of stress. There's good stress and there's bad stress. When I first started on this and I was working as a therapist, I was only looking for the bad stress because I was trying to find lots of clients. And then I remember one of my friends saying to me one day, you know, I do some of my best work when my back's against the wall. It's like you're saying with the go-kart.
Yeah.
When you're under pressure, and that's called eustress, it's spelled E-U and then stress, and that's good stress. Stress is when our body is on overdrive, when we're flooded with chemicals, we've got lots of adrenaline going, and we're going for it.
Yeah.
And it can be a good thing.
Of course.
Stress becomes a bad thing in two situations. One is if we're responding to it as if it's a bad thing, and the second is if it goes on for too long.
Got you.
We're designed to be able to live with very high levels of stress for a short period of time.
Perfect.
It's big stress doesn't kill people.
No.
It's very low levels of stress for a long time.
So
that's
drip,
what kills
drip,
people.
Drip, yeah.
That's what causes heart conditions, and that's what causes other more serious mental issues.
So stress is not the enemy. Recovery time is.
Yeah, that's a good way.
It's like driving, I suppose, isn't it? Like you get your car, and you can take that car out and redline it to 8,000, 9,000 revs, and it'll be fine. But if all you ever did was drive it at 8,000, 9,000 revs, it'd soon die.
Yeah, and absolutely, yes. Right. You'd blow your engine up, wouldn't you?
You'd blow it up,
wouldn't you? And that's a great example. If you go and start your car up on the drive and you rev your car up to 9,000 revs and never go anywhere, your engine will burn out.
It'll pop out, and we're the same.
Yeah, absolutely, we are, yeah.
Yeah. So do we need more stress in our lives, would you say?
We need to learn
stress.
We need to learn to manage stress.
Sure.
No, we don't need more stress. There's plenty of that. But actually, most of the time, the stress is the way we respond to it. But the way society's going, especially the way business is going, it doesn't help. Mobile phones are the worst offender for this. People are switched on 24 hours of the day.
Yeah.
I don't do a lot of just stress management work these days, but when I did and it was business people coming to me, I'd ask them, when do you check your phone in the morning? And most of the time, the phone's the alarm
Side
clock.
Of the bed, yeah.
They wake up and they check their emails. The last thing they do before they go to bed is check their emails.
Sure.
They're at work 24 hours of the day. Yeah. We can't
Yeah. So these devices that's been designed to better connect us has actually disconnected us, but created more stress as a result of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do we fix that? Can it be fixed?
Yeah, there's an off button. the bit is training people to switch it off.
Yes.
And some of that starts with the culture in companies. If the manager is working 10 hours a day and doesn't go home till 6 o'clock, they're creating a culture of that's what needs to happen to get on in this organisation.
Right, yeah.
We need the bosses to go home at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock when the end of the working days, and that gives everyone else permission to do it.
Sure. What if they really enjoy it though and they don't want to go home? Maybe their hobby, their interest and their life is actually like kind of integrated into that workplace.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? It could be either. But if they're a good manager, a good leader, they need to be aware of the signals that they're giving out to
other people.
If they want to work 10 hours a day, maybe go home and do it.
Right. But just be mindful of who's around you.
Yeah, what are you teaching other people to do? It's the same thing with children. You can tell them what to do, but they don't copy what you tell them to do. They copy what you actually do.
Yeah.
And the manager of a company can be telling everyone to go home when the bell goes at the end of the day, but if they're not doing it themselves,
of course,
people think that's what you need to do to get on.
Yeah, it makes total sense. So why do some people, would you say, why do some people want to be constantly achieving more rather than being satisfied with what they have? So this kind of ties back in a little bit what we said right at the very start.
It does.
But some people, I remember like part of some of the communities that we're involved with, the groups and the Facebook stuff, that they see people on there that talk about like, I'm just never satisfied. I get it, I set a goal, I get it. And then I'm like, I'm never satisfied with that.
Yeah.
So why is that though? What's the real purpose behind that? Is that upbringing?
There's lots of things. One of the biggest enemies of this is the personal development industry.
Uh-huh.
And I love personal development. Mm-hmm. And to some extent, I love the personal development industry, but it's got a lot to answer for as well. Because we're constantly telling people that they need to be a better version of themselves. And a lot of the time, it goes back to what do people really want?
What do they really want?
If somebody sets out to build a £10 million business and sell it and have that money in the bank, what do they really want?
Yeah.
What do they want that money for? How is it going to make them feel? What are they going to do with their life afterwards?
Sure.
And they're going after the goal of having X amount in the bank account, but the real goal is maybe the lifestyle. But if they haven't understood that, then they never get. Then the itch isn't going to get scratched. If you don't know what the itch is, it's not going to get scratched.
So like for people that are like that, what would be a good piece of advice for them?
Okay, there's a very simple process that I take people through. It's very simple, but it's that simple. Most people won't do it, and I call the process releasing the brakes. And this is all about understanding people's values.
Uh-huh.
What is it that really drives you in life? Uh-huh. Not what you think, but what is really driving you.
Yep.
The way that we do this, and you can do this with a buddy, you don't have to hire a coach to do it, is you go out for a walk in the woods somewhere, away from your day-to-day environment, and what we do, I'd ask you to come up with 5 significant moments in your life.
Okay.
They can be significant because they were great or significant because they were not great. Better to come up with at least 4 that are great.
What are great, yes.
And I'd just engage you in conversation. And I'd be listening out for what is it about that that made that, what, the way that it made, how did it make you feel when that happened,
yeah,
John?
Yeah.
Why was it important to you? Why is driving your nice car not as fulfilling as walking hand in hand with your wife? What is it about walking hand in hand with your wife?
Right.
And what you're listening out for is the values. What is it that people really want? And it's often things like people want peace of mind.
Sure.
Once you've got that, you then design a life around it.
Mm.
So you ask yourself very simply, once you know what your top 5 values are, what are the things that you can do to fulfill that?
Mm-hmm.
And what are the things you sometimes do that get in the way of that?
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah?
Yep.
And then at the end of each week or each day or each month, you say, ask yourself questions like, what did I deliberately do this week to fulfill my value?
To fulfill it? That's a good question, yeah.
Not things that just happened anyway. Mm. What did I go out of my way to do?
Yeah.
And that's when you're designing a life around your values.
That's amazing.
When you ask people about their values, most people tell you their top value is to be happy. Happiness is not a value. Happiness is the result that you get when you live a life that fulfills your values.
That's an incredible saying. Say that again.
Happiness is the feeling that you get when you live a life that fulfills your values.
That's fantastic.
When if
that's a, that should be a t-shirt.
Thank you. When people live a life that either is in conflict with their values or doesn't fulfill them, people are disappointed and unhappy and unfulfilled.
Sure.
When they live a life that fulfills their values, they're happy.
They're happy. No matter what, no matter what.
Exactly. Yeah. But it comes down to the most basic question. Again, you covered this on your podcast this morning. I listened to two of them. I can't remember which one. When you ask people, what do they want? What do they normally tell you?
Yeah.
They tell you what they don't want.
They tell you what they don't want, yeah.
And the starting point with any coaching relationship is, what do you
what
want?
What do you want?
What do you want?
Totally.
And at that point, most people shut up because they don't know.
They don't really know, do they? They're hoping that you're going to give them the answer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Or you see them, like when we do workshops or seminars, and you ask them to write the goals down, and they're looking at somebody else's.
Yeah.
It's like, well, this is your life. Don't cheat.
And that's again part of the society that we live in. It tells us that we need to drive X amount of comparing. Yeah. Sure. That's,
so why do people do that then? Why do people copy other people?
Why do people copy other people? Is it because they see other people copying other people? I don't know, really.
But, confidence, would you say? Is it self-confidence? They're not confident in themselves, so they're...
It could be. Right. It could be a combination of a lot of factors. But yeah, definitely, definitely actually, I read somewhere that it's kind of a survival mechanism that if you've got a load of sheep in the field and they all run away, maybe they know that that's going to keep them safe, so you do the same thing. And I think the same was most people do what most people do.
Yeah. I've seen an experiment on Facebook actually with this, where you got just one person come running around the corner screaming, telling the other people to run. Nobody, they couldn't see what we were running from, but they all started running.
Yeah.
Just because that one person were doing it.
Yeah.
And I think sheep comes into that really well, doesn't it? We do follow sheep, don't we? We do that.
Yeah.
And is that to fit in? Is it to feel safe? Is it to fit in? Is it? Yeah. I suppose, like you said, there's lots of different...
But I think some of that actually comes down to the hardwired that we are programmed to...
Be together.
Be together to do what other people do because they've learned how to be safe.
Of course, of course. Fascinating, fascinating. So... How powerful can humans be? Because we're not even tapping even like a small proportion of our full potential, are we?
Yeah.
Now, how powerful can we be?
And that's my favourite question. How powerful can people be?
Yeah.
And to me, I don't know what the answer is, John. I really don't. And I'm not a massive goal-driven person. I prefer to ask the question, what is possible? Yeah. Not I want to go out and build a business that allows me to buy X, Y, and Z. What can I create here? What actually is possible?
Sure.
How fast can I go? And it's a different way of looking at the world. And how powerful can people be?
Sure.
I don't know. But if we just look at things that people have done incredible things.
Yeah.
And people will continue to do incredible things.
Sure.
Unless they get in their own way.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Is that if we aren't doing incredible things, because we are capable of doing incredible things, but unless we do things that are incredible, we just don't do anything. You know, who knows what we'll do?
Yeah.
So, you know, if we have not got something incredible to work towards and push towards.
Yeah. Does it have to be something incredible or does it just... But it depends what incredible is, because what is incredible to you, John?
Is different to somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
And some people that... Driving a supercar is incredible, and to other people, having a happy relationship to somebody to go home to that they really want to be with, to them, that's incredible.
Got you. Complete random question, different. I'm going to chuck random ones like that in all these different podcasts. What's more important? Ready? Here we go. What's more important? Who you know or who knows you?
What's more important? Wow, they're both important. It depends what you want to achieve. And as a coach, I always answer a question with a question. So, to achieve what?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the reason why I like this question so much, we were talking about this last night with my wife, and I think the reason why I like this so much is it's very, again, hardwired into us from an early age where, like, if you achieve something, it's like, what do people tend to say? They'll be like, oh, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
But actually, as especially from a business point of view, I feel it's probably more important that people know you, because if it's all about you knowing people, but that doesn't mean that you're ever going to do any work together.
Absolutely.
Whereas if they know you and they know that you're a practitioner of the mind and you can relieve stress from people's lives and you can make them feel happy and excited again, then that, to me, I think it's probably more important than who you know.
Yeah, I think it, certainly in a business context, I would agree with
sure,
that.
Sure, sure.
But both important.
Both important. Good stuff. Right. To wrap things up then, a couple of questions. What is... what's your biggest tip for somebody in life? If they want to have a life what's exciting, passionate, fulfilled, what would be your number one tip to them?
To define what it is that's going to give them a feeling of passion and excitement. Mm-hmm. To what is excitement to them? Is it jumping out of an aeroplane? Is it racing cars?
Uh-huh.
What is and to have more than one way of getting there.
Yes.
Because if you only have one way of getting there, what happens if it doesn't happen?
Oh,
so having more
question.
Than one way.
Good. Next one, money. Mm. So, like, what's your thoughts on money? Do you know, do we talk about it too much? Do we not talk about it enough? We know that in here in the UK, people are very hung up about talking about money.
Yeah.
Do you think that impacts us negatively because we're not openly talking about it? Like America, for example, they're very open, aren't they? They talk about it so easily and confidently.
Yes.
They generally like do well with it.
Yes.
Do you think that because we have a hang up towards it, it causes a lot of blocks for people?
Yeah, I think it does. I think a lot of people have a poor mindset when it comes to money, and it's something that they've learned. Again, it's not something we were born with, was it? We had no concept of money when we were born. So it does create a lot of hang-ups.
I think some people still don't have a concept of money, though, do they? That maybe is the problem as well.
That's quite possible. It definitely, if financial management was taught in schools,
yes,
it still wouldn't be important to everybody, but at least then they have a choice.
They'd have a good understanding.
Whereas if they don't understand it, they don't have a choice.
Of course.
So, I mean, I'm obviously you're familiar with the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Definitely.
If those kind of concepts were taught in school, not everybody wants to run a business and make a lot of money, but they have a choice.
They've got a choice.
Yeah.
And choice is the word, isn't it?
Yeah. And choice is always the word.
Yeah.
One of the key phrases that was banged into me when I was doing my NLP Master Practitioners was always add choice.
Always had choice.
Yeah. You're never trying to take someone down a particular path. You're trying to give them choices.
Got you. And then they decide which way to go.
They make the choices.
That's incredible. That's really good. Tony, that's been absolutely wonderful. What a great topic we've been covering there.
It's been a great conversation.
It's been amazing. So for everybody that's listening or watching, like, where can they find out more about you?
Thank you for asking that. They can find out more about me. I make videos about just stuff like this, and I put them on my Facebook page, which is Mindset Academy Zone, if you put that into Facebook, or the website that goes with it is themindsetacademy.education.
Okay.
And all the videos I've put out are on there.
Fantastic.
And my business website is positive-changes.net. Not very interesting for most people.
Okay.
But
it should be, though.
Well, people in business, that's specifically targeted at courses that I run in business.
Of course.
But a good place to, if people like what I'm talking about here, check out the Mindset Academy.
Yeah.
And even better, if they've got questions they want to ask me, I'll make videos about them, because I don't want to be spouting content at people.
Sure.
But if people have got challenges, I'll make a video for them.
So just tell us a little bit about the Mindset Academy then, so people can find out a little bit more about that. Like, what is it, and how is it a cost to it? Do they have to subscribe to it? How does it work?
It's a Facebook page, and twice a week I'm putting out video content. And the best video content comes in response to questions. And one of the things that got a lot of interaction recently was somebody, they'd done something which was a very significant thing for them. And their comment was, it felt so good when I walked off that stage, but I know that feeling's gonna be gone in a couple of weeks. So I showed them an NLP technique called anchoring to keep that technique, to keep that feeling.
Yes.
And I've had people that I don't know coming up to me and saying, thank you, I anchored that and I've got this great feeling that I can bring back anytime I want to.
That's amazing.
It is, and that's why I do it, because it's useful stuff. The other reason I do it is purely selfish. You know as a coach yourself, John, that every person you coach, you learn from.
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
If people are asking me questions and I'm answering them, it's improving me as a coach
as
well.
Yeah.
So it's just... I love it, and I hope that people keep interacting with it.
Amazing, brilliant. Well, we'll put the links and the details in the description of this as well. But again, thank you so much for your time today, Tony. It's been fascinating. Pleasure. We could do this probably over a beer and make this last for maybe half a day the next time.
Yeah, let's do that. Thanks, John. Appreciate
absolutely
it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Tony.